Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, folks, coming up on today's show, of course, we're talking about the coronavirus. Russ has some things to say about that. So do I. But we thought we'd try and provide some levity as well. I hope it doesn't backfire. Well, you can listen for yourself. Not only that, but we had our first guest on. So listen up. What a great young guy he is. Eric Kendricks came on, who's plays for the Minnesota Vikings, made the playoffs this year. Great kid, and dates Russ's daughter. And I ended up having an impromptu 15-minute conversation with him. Check it out. All that and much, much more coming up on the show. Okay, listen, people. Let's fight this thing. Gather around, everybody, okay? Let's do this thing. We can beat it, all right? Like a team, like a good NHL team, all right? Rusty, how are you? It's the Suspendables once again. Jim Jerome coming at you, and Russ in L.A., and me locked in my house in Edmonton. This is all about the coronavirus, of course, when we record this. There it is.
Cheers.
Russ, I'm going to tell you something. The provincial government in Ontario, okay, they can't decide what to do about COVID-19, the coronavirus, but they sure know that they've stocked all the liquor stores there with White Claw.
They've
loaded up on the White Claw, said, whatever, we'll get to the COVID thing in a minute, but we want to let everyone know there's a bunch of White Claw available. So, crazy times, Rusty.
Oh, huh? My God, it's just... it's unreal. And like you said, I'm living in LA, and to see how people are reacting, going to the grocery store, and older people are really scared, and people are buying stuff they wouldn't normally buy, like all the hard goods, like pasta. I call them hard goods. I don't know if it's correct or not, but pastas,
dry goods.
They're all disappearing off the shelves. And then the cleaning products, sterilization is gone. And I have to giggle because I've gone to the store a few times this week.
Yep.
And my favorite store in the world is Costco. So I go there because they sell great wine. And I'm always there, you know, looking right. at what, you know, just seeing if they've got some good deals going on and new wines come in. So I'm there quite a bit. It's in my neighborhood. And all the dads must have been sent out. All the moms are staying home with the family and all the kids, and all the dads are out. And here are all these dads shopping.
Yeah.
And a few of them, you know, they had that look like, I've never been in here before. I've never done this. But look at all the wine. And they were full. Their baskets were full of wine. And they had this look of... I didn't know this shit was in here.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And, you know, they were sent there to get all kinds of stuff that they probably couldn't buy, and so they loaded up on wine. So I was giggling to myself, but it's crazy right now down here.
I was, and we'll talk more about it. I was a bad father last night. My son was out with his buddies, and one of his buddies gets in a mixer, and
a fight.
Gets in a fight and ends up in the hospital, and
not a good mixer for him.
Yeah, he goes down, ends up in the hospital, and so my son gets a hold of me, and what's going on? And so this is at 3-4 in the morning, and I ran.
I'm 2 miles out of town.
My son was smart. Yeah, turn and run, kid. Turn and run. But anyway, where I was the bad dad is now I throw them in the car. So we better go over and check on him and see what's up. And, we get to the hospital, and I'm starting to go, oh yeah, hospitals.
I don't know. Not a good place.
I sent my kids in to check on him.
Oh God.
You're supposed to take the fall if you're a good father, Russ.
You know? FaceTime me. Go in there and FaceTime me and let me know how he's doing.
Let me just set up my camera here, Rusty. Okay.
My camera set up. Yeah. So we were told by our coach.
Yep.
Manager Reg. Coach Reg to videotape the show. So I've got my iPhone leaning up against a bottle of Tuscan wine.
Of course you
that do. I'm going to finish that off later. I opened it last night. I'm going to finish it off tonight. But I'm staring at it gleefully.
I've got mine leaning up the Alcoholics Anonymous book. That's right.
With your coin. your coin.
We got, we got the solution, folks, okay? Smokes and White Claw. All right? That's how we're... I didn't know... I'm never sure, Russ, how to handle this. This thing is so big. And I thought, what are we going to talk about on the show? But we got to provide levity, Russ. We got to provide some humor to people and, try our best. And although, when I say that, Russ, I'm interested in how you feel about it. You've told me what people are doing there, but I'm on the 1 to 10 scale, Russ, about being nervous about this, 10 being freaking out. I'm above 5.
Yeah.
I'm a 6 or 7 guy going, what the fuck is going on here? What about you?
I've been a little down this week. After seeing a few of those people out in the grocery stores, and what Paris and I go out and we do our own grocery shopping, there's some people here that have never been in a freaking grocery store.
Right.
And when you go and you see the look on people's face, it just, you can't help, it rubs off. And we have a son living in Michigan, daughter who's traveling like crazy for work. My daughter's Allie, who's just saying, you know what, I'm going to live my life. I'm taking all the precautions.
Yeah.
My son has, he has asthma. I worry about him. What happens to him? When your kids are away from you, you tend to worry more. I got friends in Maui that flew there just because they felt like it was a safe place.
Yep.
And, everybody's talking about it. No, not one person I know is not talking about it. When we had the fires here a year ago, the big one was a year and a half ago, but you can replace all that stuff if, you got insurance and you can rebuild your house. And at the time, it seems like the worst thing that could happen. Well, this is... we got Don who lives with us. He's 78 years old. He's been with us since. Lots going on. Lots to think about. Lots to worry about. All the sports have been canceled. All the schools have been canceled for us. And so we're dealing with it. We're dealing with it 24/7. And
you're staying inside, Rusty, or like I've walked to my door a couple times. I'm in my house. I live alone, and I've gone to my door and went, oh, fuck it. No, I'm staying. I'm not going to go, pick up, whatever I had to pick up, some food I did. But
I've been out. I'm not going out for no reason. I mean, I've been going out to the grocery store, going here or there. I did go to yoga with Paris on Friday, and I think I'm not going to be doing that anymore. They said just avoid kind of stuff you don't need to do.
Right.
And the advice Stephanie Coffey posted on Instagram, best advice she read was act like you have it and you don't want to give it to somebody else because...
Great advice.
Yeah, isn't it? Just take all the precautions. And so, poor Don, 78-year-old man who's living it with us, he's the one that, by statistics and what information we do know, is the one that it could harm more than any one of us who are young and healthy. So act like you have it.
So Rusty, I got to go to the experts in some of this stuff. And there was a clip of doctor whose career is virus disease management. And here's what he had to say. I thought it was pretty good.
What we've learned in Ebola outbreaks is you need to react quickly. You need to go after the virus. You need to stop the chains of transmission. You need to engage with communities very deeply. Community acceptance is hugely important. You need to be coordinated. You need to be coherent. You need to look at the other sectoral impacts, the schools and security and economic. So it's essentially many of those same lessons. But the lessons I've learned after so many Ebola outbreaks in my career are be fast, have no regrets. You must be the first mover. The virus will always get you if you don't move quickly. And you need to be prepared. And I say this, one of the great things in emergency response, and anyone who's involved in emergency response will know this, if you need to be right before you move, you will never win. Perfection is the enemy of the good when it comes to emergency management. Speed trumps perfection. And the problem in society we have at the moment is everyone is afraid of making a mistake. Everyone is afraid of the consequence of error. But the greatest error is not to move. The greatest error is to be paralyzed by the fear of failure. And I think that's the single biggest lesson I've learned in Ebola responses in the past.
So I like this whole idea of what this guy said about, you know, that people are fearful that they're going to make a mistake because they want to shut down their gymnasium or their restaurant or something. And this guy's saying that's idiotic. That's what prevents from curing the thing or stopping it. You know,
yeah.
I like that angle. But what did you think?
Yeah, I thought I loved what he said about society today. We're just worried about being wrong.
Right.
I think that's why they're so hard on Donald Trump here in the United States, and maybe around the world, is, you know, they, when he banned the travel to China, they slammed him.
Right.
And then they slammed him for shutting down, not warning everybody he was cutting back the travel to Europe.
Right.
And now we, like today, we're hearing all these horrible statistics about Italy and Europe. And, you know, he's not afraid of being right or wrong, you know, and I don't care what your take is on him, but I think that's why he gets hammered in the media, because he's taking action with, you know, he's not a politician. He's taking action. And
right. I'll tell you what, Russ, that, you know, in troubled times, right? Like we have right now, you look to your leaders, man, because it's just like on a much smaller scale, Russ, when I was talking about this thing, I look up to you. I think you're smart. I think you're pragmatic. And I said, I got to ask Russ what I should be doing about this thing. And so you look to friends and stuff, and people who are in a panic want someone to make a decision for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this fucking Donald Trump, he did that. And I give this guy a ton of credit.
Yeah.
That's the sort of guy you know, maybe you didn't like him before this virus came along, but I sure like him now, where he comes forward and goes, I'm vetoing everything and I'm doing it this way and I'm shutting everything down.
Yeah.
And that's where leaders are great, you know, and yeah. I think what this guy did is good. You know, I think they should shut the whole thing down. Stock market, everything.
Well, today, Gavin Newsom, here's a guy I don't like. And I, for the first time, I was standing there going, attaboy, during his speech. Like he was so, I actually, all today made me like the guy, what he was saying. I don't agree with his politics. I don't agree with a lot of things he's doing in California, but what he's doing today is amazing. And I applaud his leadership, because what you just said, we're looking for leadership, and he showed leadership today. They shut down all the bars, all the pubs. They're shutting down most of the schools, and they're, anyone, I think 65 or older can't leave their house. They got to stay in. And the only, I think, now I might be getting this wrong, but I think they can go to store and back, or they're trying to keep people who are elderly away from the virus. And then, like I said earlier, act like you have it. So if you've got elderly people around you, be very, very careful that you're, you know, if you're a carrier, you're not giving it to them, and you know, you're respecting their
right
space. So anyways, you're right. We need lead people to, you know, in the dressing room, I used to always say, but somebody, I heard it, lead, follow, or get the F out of the way. And that's what we need right now.
Yeah, you do. You look to those people, right? You look to, you know, just what you said, right? When times are tough, when you're, you know, tied 3-3 with a period to go in a game 7, right? I'm the sort of guy who walks in there and go, okay, who's grabbing the ball here? What should we do? You know, how do we handle this? you've been around it. You can speak to it personally, you know. And it can make a big difference, right, Russ? When you got the strong leadership.
I look to my kids and my 17-year-olds like, oh, if we get quarantined, I want to get quarantined at a friend's house. And even with all this social media, they want to be around their friends. And it's a hard one. You know, I think for adults, we can say, you know what, I'm good. I'm going to stay in and I'm going to do stuff around the house. But for younger people, I think it's really hard. This one's going to be a real hard one for a lot of them. They go to school every day, even though if they're not super social, they're around people all the time. Mm-hmm. We're not like that unless you work in a place that has millions of or tons of people around you. They're used to being social 5 days a week, and you know it's going to be a tough one for kids. No, you cannot leave that. You can't leave. You got to stay in. And my daughter wanted to go to a freaking movie last night with her two friends. And I'm like, this is a horrible idea. And I text her right before the movie was going to start. And she says, oh, we didn't go.
Yeah.
And the kid she was going with, his mom's a very famous singer. And I said, what is she cooking for dinner tonight as a joke? And Brooklyn said, nothing. She's in her room. She can't afford to get sick because she, you know, she has to sing. And
right.
All this stuff. So,
well, that may be the least of their worries. What we do know about it, folks, to the best of my knowledge, is without fear mongering, but we have to be cautious. Okay, that here's what we do know is more and more things are shutting down. The medical field is coming forward saying this is serious. Okay, you've got to do better than taking precautions. Now you've got to make this part of your day, and don't socialize instead of, and they're changing the social distancing, Russ, to physical distancing. So everyone's clear that you shouldn't be coming around people. More numbers are coming in. You have to understand that there's going to be more cases of it. It's going to grow. It hasn't peaked, but it's my ex-wife, who's a doctor, said, look, it's like the most severe cold you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And that stuff does affect the elderly. And she reminded me that, but so does everything affect the elderly more.
Yeah.
You know, like if they get, you know, if they need blood thinners, it's way more important that someone over 80 gets it than someone who's 30. If they do get a cold, you know, it turns into pneumonia a lot of times, and it does affect them. So this thing's no different that way, in my opinion. But it's growing. So we're right in the middle of it. Did you go through this, Russ? My kids are all over 18, and as this thing began to grow, and I'm a guy who's on the side of yikes. Okay. Yikes. I'm all of a sudden I said, I got to get around my kids. I got to find my kids. I never want to dismiss what happened at 9/11, but I felt that same sort of thing when this thing is growing and coming down going, you know, are my kids going to be okay? The difficulty, Russ, is they're over 18. I was, you know, if my kids were 9 or 10 years old, I rule, you know, right?
Right.
But I got my son who's telling me, relax, Dad, I'm going to go to school. And I'm going, no, you're not. And he goes, well, I can do, you know, he's not lippy, but he's like, you're over worrying. And thank God today they shut the schools here in Edmonton. Okay.
Yeah.
All the schools. So I don't know. Did you go through any of that? What was your sort of reaction when you, like, what took you from, okay, this thing to, whoa, this thing?
Well, first thing, I was thinking economics, like this is really, you know, economically is horrible. And then I went, you know what, the economics don't matter anymore. It's about health. And so I went through that. And then, I just worry about my kids. I mean,
right.
I just, when you have children, you don't want them to feel any pain or sorrow or,
right.
You don't. And so my daughter, like your son, she's working and traveling. And I'm like, God, is that really a good idea? But she's just like, I'm not going to let this stop me. And for her, she's never mentioned, well, I don't want to, you know, it's about the money. It's just about, this is what I'm doing. And this is, you know, I've had some jobs shut down. They don't want us to, but she was in San Francisco just last week and they were shooting her you know, taking pictures. And I guess there's only a few people in the room and that, but I would sense that that kind of stuff is going to stop. So hopefully, you know, she's not going to be doing that, but I just worry about them, and I worry about my wife, and then my brothers and my sister and their kids, and you know, because they say it's going to affect every family in some way. So
yeah, like lots of people are going to get it, but they're not going to die from it,
right? And we may have already had it. You know, people may have already been sick, and because we don't know when it was, how soon it was here, really. I mean, it could have been here in October, November. I'm sure it was.
Right.
Paris and I were in New York, and I constantly was blowing my nose. Like, it was weird. I had, you know, if you look at the symptoms, both of us have probably had the symptoms of what CR19 is, and we haven't been tested, so we don't know. But I don't know if you've had it. Say you had it and then you got better, and then can you go in and get tested, and they can tell whether you've had it or not? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it's all so new, right?
Like the chicken pox, you mean, where you did have it, so you can't get it again,
right? Yeah. Or the flu. You know, you get the flu every year or every other year.
Right. We got a vaccine for it now.
Anyways, I've seen a lot of funny little, you know, guys are sending me, you know, Instagram stuff and funny, like people are actually trying to not enjoy the moment, but they're trying to make light of it. Probably, you know, just to get through this. But the funny one was on Friday was, Canada, somebody in a company in Canada identified the virus, and they someone said shut hockey down for 2 days, and typical Canadian figures out a cure for coronavirus just to get hockey back.
Don't fuck with my hockey.
Yeah. So it's just, there's some funny things going out around there, but it's not funny. But I'm glad that, you know, people are finding some humor and trying to be lighthearted and also at the same time being aware that it's serious and that we have to wash our hands and we have to protect our loved ones and we keep our social distancing and let's see if, you know, we can get through this. I couldn't sleep yesterday. Not because of this, but I went to bed early on Friday, got up early. I made some coffee and I went, what am I going to do? So 5 o'clock in the morning, I make coffee.
Right.
I'm out of the house by 5:15. I'm sitting in the parking lot.
Jesus, man.
At Vaughn's.
5:15.
At 5:15, 5:20. And I'm just thinking, you know what? When the store opens, I'll go in and get a few things that we need or haven't gotten yet. And I'm sitting in there. I'm the first one in the parking lot. And by 6 a.m., there was a lineup at both doors to get into the grocery store.
Right.
And this one guy, you know, I'm 54. This guy walks by me. He's probably in his mid 60s. And he goes, we'll get through this. We get through a lot. We get through a lot of things. Don't worry about it. We'll get through this. And I guess maybe because of the look on my face, I don't know, but he was very pleasant. And then there was this guy stocking shelves, and he was just so, he was like a rock star. He's like, you know, directing traffic, and he was happy. And then there was two older people that were snapping at, do you work here? Do you work here? To this guy. And most of the people in the store were old, and they were scared because they don't want to be around anybody.
Right.
And that's why I was saying people are scared, especially the older people. And they were like trying to get in and out. So that drives the depression of, you know, the feelings of, geez, state of panic, and it's no fun.
I'll tell you what, Russ, I think is this sort of thing that's happening. Simultaneously, it brings out two completely polarized opposite effects. One is it really shows the human spirit, what people can do, and it totally brings out the douchebag.
Yeah.
And other people.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's kind of interesting, right? You got this, you know, you got this kid doing everything he can. And then this older couple, and I don't blame anyone the way they're reacting, but you know, you've got, You got, for the douchebag awards this week, Russ, the guy who bought the 17,000 bottles of hand sanitizer.
Yeah, fuck. Loser.
Loser. You'd kill him if you saw him. Yeah. As older people are crying, panicking about the, you know, they're just so fearful. And this guy throws it up on Amazon to try and sell it for 10, 20, sometimes 80 bucks. God bless Amazon. They cut him off.
Yeah. Right?
They cancel his account, eBay, all that stuff. Like I say, it brings out the worst in people, but it also brings out the best. You know, a bunch of athletes, Russ, rich athletes and not so rich, but these arenas have all shut down now, folks.
Yeah.
Okay. And the, one of the concerns is, you know, everything is concerning, right? The economy, the health, the what are people going to do? How are they going to travel? How are they going to get to work and all that stuff? But a lot of these hourly wage earners, you know, are affected immediately. So mm-hmm. ushers, you know, parking lot attendants and everyone else who
works an arena for a game. It's a 4-hour job,
right? So the players have stepped up to donate money to cover their.
Isn't it great? So great.
It could be worse, Russ. Okay.
Oh God.
It could be. Listen to this, Rusty. My poor fucking friend. Okay. He went to the doctor. They said there's a couple things wrong with you. We've done some tests, and you've got there's two things. We're sorry to tell you. You have both cancer and Alzheimer's disease. And he said, well, at least I don't have cancer. We gotta lighten it up, Rusty. You know,
well,
we wanna,
my buddy. Okay, since we're lightening it up, my buddy from Calgary, yeah. he posts last night on Instagram. He goes, "All those who are panicking and buying up all the toilet paper, please do us all a favor and stock up on condoms so you don't produce any more idiots."
I saw another
so
one.
Good.
Another one. I don't know what these things are called. Like, you know, that someone puts up a picture and then they got. One says it's a group of guys obviously at this disaster scene, and they're all in hazmat suits, right?
Yeah.
And the top line says, "Oh my God, everybody's dead, but do you see how clean their asses are?"
Oh, Jesus. Well, you can't go out because you got that freaking smoker's cough. You'll clear a room in freaking 2 seconds if you go out.
I stay home anyway. I'm not lost at all with this thing.
Yeah.
One of the things, Rusty, we'll talk about some of the sports and your thoughts on that. They think this will be a baby boom, Russ. Everyone's staying home. They're all going to start plowing each other.
True.
There's going to be a lot of plowing going on. The big plowing match.
9/11. That's what happened, 9/11.
All those baby boomers, right, from the war.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the same thing. So a lot of the women, they think there's going to be a run on the morning after pill, you know, the one that stops the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just for women, Russ. There's one for men. It works by changing your blood type.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
No wonder you're alone. I'd love, you know what we should do is a hidden camera when you have a date? Not for this show, but we should build a big show where, you know, when you get that date, we mm-hmm. have hidden cameras and just hear the shit that you throw out.
Listen.
Oh, my God.
We don't need to do that, Russ. I have hidden cameras all over my house already for every date that comes in. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
Russ, when you were in playing hockey, what did they do? Because I know this happens with hockey teams. Were you ever in a situation where the coach came in and said, look at this flu bug is whipping around the team here. Was there any thought like we better not play games. We better isolate it. Everyone.
It was the best was in Montreal. They said, look, if you're ever feeling ill and mm-hmm. we're on the road, just go downstairs and get another room and check into another room.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were the single guys, you know, what we did, we got sick on the road a lot. We had to go downstairs and get another room.
Nice. I can do that, coach. Yeah. Yeah, you won't believe it. I got a kidney stone, coach. I better go relax.
Yeah, don't give your teammate the cold, the flu or anything. So it was tough and when you when you got sick, it was hard because, you know, you didn't, kind of what we're going through right now, you didn't want to miss a game, a practice. You didn't want to admit to it. Because if you went in and told the trainer that you had something, he went immediately to the coach and told him. So guys were like, they'd go in and help themselves to the cold medicine. And
right.
Gino Ojek, do you want to hear Gino Ojek story?
Do I ever?
Yeah. So Gino and I played together in Vancouver, and he's a great guy, tough as nails. And he walks into the medical room where a lot of guys would, after they took off their street clothes, go get a cup of coffee, get newspaper, the notes, media notes, and go into the warm medical room that, and guys would be sitting around, sitting on the tables, talking to the injured guys. It was a gathering place. So yeah. Gino walks in the street clothes and goes, "Hey, Bernie, do you got any A535? He goes, "Yeah, I got some A535. Here. Do you got a spoon?" And Bernie's like, "Gino, what do you need a spoon for?" He goes, "I got a sore throat. I need to take some A535.
No.
And everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, you got to get him a spoon. Like, get him a spoon."
No.
They give him a spoon. He filled up the spoon with A535 and swallowed it.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
Jesus. Jesus, man. Why, Russ? Why would you let a guy do that, Russ? He could die.
No.
What?
He's not going to die from eating A535.
You know, A535 is like that heat fucking missile of a gel that you put on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I got a sore throat.
Stop it. I can't. Of course. Yeah. Of course you, right there. Yeah, let him have it. Yeah, let him have it. Both
oh,
barrels.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do, Russ, now with all your time? What's happening?
Well, you know what I'm noticing is a lot of golfers out in front of the Sherwood there that I saw Gretz go by and Janet and their crew. And I said to Wayne, I said, "No sports on," because he doesn't play golf on the weekends. He usually plays during the week. So I said, "No sports, eh, on the weekend, so playing golf." And he goes, "Yeah, we're going to keep playing till they shut it down." And yeah. I went, "God, yeah, they might, but golf seems like a great place because you're out in the open air and there's only a few people playing." And I go,
"Right.
Yeah, they'll just make everyone take their own cart."
Yeah, golfers, old golfers never die. What happened was the Players' Championship, right, was on. This was the first, and they played the first day, and then they canceled the round. Okay, they canceled the rest of the tournament. So this thing, and what happened was Justin Thomas, the poor guy, because it sounded a little selfish. He said, "Well, look, we're not near the fans. We're out on the grass, and we're away from people." And then there was a bit of a backlash going, "Well, that's fine, dude. You're okay, but what about the fans?" And he said, you know, it was misinformation, Russ.
Yeah,
right?
He's a great, great guy.
He's a great guy, right? And they said, "Well, hang on a minute. That's, you know, this thing can get you from anywhere. You know,
right.
It's a floating air virus and stuff like that." Russ, what should happen with the NHL, of course, is on hiatus like every other league. You know, at what point do you cancel the whole season, Russ? Or what, should they pick it up where it was last year? What's going to happen? What do you think they should do?
I think that if they can play, like just say they can start May 1st.
Right.
They should have a best of three wild card for the wild card teams, you know, so who are those teams? So best of three.
Yeah.
Take four teams on from each conference, and then they get into the top 16, and then make it best of five. Shrink it from best of seven to best of five, four rounds, and play it.
Right.
But if they can start playing, if they can't start playing before May 1st, then they should just
gas the whole season.
Yeah, and then put an asterisk, and maybe the leading team. Boston Bruins, I think it is right now, give them an asterisk and call them the Stanley Cup champions or the league champions or whatever. I guess they'd win the President's Cup anyways. And maybe there's just no, you know, this is just kind of one of those times where there's an asterisk and nobody played.
We don't know, right? It's sort of the thing of the unknown, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But if they can play, what I would do is take the two teams that are the wild cards, the two teams below them, so they would be 9th and 10th, and then I would do a best of three, and then the winner of that gets in, those two teams get in.
Right. Something like that.
Something like that. Because you don't want to ignore that team that's a point out or, you know... If they're 10 points, if there's a differential of 10 points, then forget it.
Right.
But if they're close, like a point or two apart, then they mm-hmm. should have a chance.
The NFL today, they've closed their collective bargaining agreement. They came up with three significant things, I'm sure, amongst others. But one is they're going to add an extra game to 17.
Revenue.
They're also going to add two more playoff games.
Revenue.
And they're not going to test for pot.
Okay, so I think the marijuana thing, I'm not a marijuana guy, but I just think that they're legalizing it. It's like alcohol. You know what? People who smoke pot, they order a pizza and go to sleep. Like, big freaking deal.
Right.
It's your choice. I mean, if you want to do it, do it. That's my opinion on marijuana. I don't think it should be illegal. And I'm sure there's a bunch of people out there who can tell me why it should be and why it shouldn't be. But these big men need something. And CBD is healing a lot of people in different reasons. So the marijuana thing, I think, is stupid. They should be allowed to smoke marijuana if they want. Anybody in society should be, if you're of age, should be able to smoke marijuana, just like alcohol. But the other two thing is the league is, you know what? They want more money. The owners want more money. They make it from the TV. I mean, it's a freaking cash cow.
Right.
Why wouldn't they push for that? Give the boys their pot. Give us our cash.
Here's the issue, Russ, where I think you're wrong on the pot thing right now, is the problem I have with it is there's different strengths of pot, and there's still some unknown about what's in that fucking pot.
Jimmy. You know what? That was your drug dealer telling you cocaine was pot. You freaking idiot.
You know
what? What? And I don't smoke it? Oh, you can smoke it, but you can snort it. It's called marijuana. We call it cocaine, but it's really marijuana.
Well, it's different.
Trust me,
shit.
You won't get hooked.
You
won't get hooked on it, Jimmy. You won't. Trust me on this.
You know, if Evel Knievel jumped again, it would be over your fucking mouth.
Hey, okay? Hey, we're hearing from the guy who's been sober for 9 years how we shouldn't legalize marijuana. I love it.
Well, I'm worried about the different strains, okay? I'm worried about it's not...
No, that was called cocaine.
All right. Listen.
Okay.
Listen to me for a second, okay? Just zip it, okay? Just try and regroup for 1 second, okay? Calm the fuck down. I'm swearing more now, okay? Okay, because I want to. Do you think in the NHL, Russ, that... Do you think they should allow more teams in the playoffs than 16?
Well, when I first started playing, the first round was best of five. Maybe they allow more teams in and they do a best of... five or best of three, like I mentioned, you know, the wild cards,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and have them play off. And I don't know.
Tell me this, Russ. How beat up does a guy get from a hockey game? Because a lot of the takes all the time on all this stuff, expanding the league, more playoff games, longer series, blah, blah, blah. Often you will hear, no, you're killing the players, man. And I've always said, well, is it really that hard? 22, 23 minutes? Does it knock the shit out of a hockey player?
I'm, you know, these guys play 90 or 85 games, exhibition and regular mm-hmm. season, right?
Yep.
86. And then depending on your playoffs, so some guys are playing up to 100.
Right.
86 to 100 games a year. Adding a couple games is not going to make, it's not going to change many athletes. I look at Chicago, and they had that dynasty team where they were winning cups, and you got young guys like Taze and a couple of their defensemen that are just, they look tired. And I call it miles on the tires. Like there's the body can only have so many miles on the, or the tire can only have so many miles on the tire, and the body's same thing. So I think a couple games a year per person isn't going to affect too many players, but it's the guys that go long deep into the playoffs every year that are the ones that will get banged up and, you know, might cost them time on their career later on, but a couple games, not a big game changer. I'll tell you a funny story when, or I shouldn't lead it off as a funny story, but a story was, is that when we got our deal done, Pat Quinn, he said, he goes, why did you guys go from 80 to 82 games? You know, I was laughing my ass off because, you know, here's the GM, president of Vancouver Canucks, complaining that we're going to play two more games because they went from 80 to 82. Because that's when we did those offsite games or whatever they're called.
Yeah, like, right,
you know, we'd play
in, go to St. John's, Newfoundland or something.
Yeah, it was more like in markets where they thought they could grow the game, like San Antonio, and they would go to, you know, Quebec, and, you know, and they played different, two teams would play in a different city anyways. It was funny. He was complaining about us expanding. He wasn't playing. He wasn't playing. Hey, Eric just walked in. Do you want to talk to him for a sec?
I would love to talk to Eric for a second.
I'll put him on. I'm going to open a claw. Do you want a white claw?
Sure.
Okay. He wants a white claw.
All right.
It's Jim.
Eric, is this for real? Is this? Do we really have you on the microphone right now?
This is a real deal, Holyfield.
So for those of you just tuning in, Eric, thanks a lot for doing this. Real deal, Holyfield. I'm going to steal that. I like that. I like that, man. You play for the Minnesota Vikings. You date Russ's daughter, and you are a superstar in the NFL. And a couple things happened as we bring you on today. Are you cooking now at Russ's house? He claims he's a great cook. First of all,
yeah, he actually is. He's not lying.
Yeah,
they get down.
They do well. Very good. Yeah, and he's a pretty strong drinker, isn't he? Like, have you ever seen anyone
really
better?
Really strong. I remember one of the first times I hung out with him. I tried to keep up with him and all the hockey buddies.
Yeah,
got buried.
Yeah, you don't ever try and do that. You know, take him on in football. Don't take us Canadians on in drinking. You had a great year. Tell us about it. You guys made the playoffs. How do you sum it up?
As a team, you know, we did good. We did well. You know, we made it to playoffs. We won the first game on the road and. You know, we lost versus San Francisco in the next round. They were a good team. Obviously, we want to win the Super Bowl every year. We go and prepare that way. It just didn't happen. You know, we didn't play well enough football, good enough football in the end of the year. And, you know, in the win in the NFL, you got to play good in the playoffs. You know, it's about who's hot at the end of the year.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your story, how you, you know, where you grew up. How you got into football? Were there other sports that you were thinking of at the time, like a lot of pro athletes? And fill us in a little bit.
I grew up in Fresno, California. Played sports all my life. You know, baseball, basketball, football, soccer, volleyball. You know, I've done track. I mean, everything. Anything get my hands on anything.
What were you good at track in?
Honestly, when I wasn't really a strong runner when I did track, and then high school I played baseball, so I never ran track in high school. But like, you know, I wouldn't be able to tell you my times or anything. It was only middle school.
Right.
But yeah, so I was a big baseball player and basketball player in high school, and if anything, I would probably went the baseball route if I didn't go the football route. Mm-hmm. But you know, I was lucky enough to have a brother that's, you know, really close to me in age, and he actually, you know, I always often say, you know, he's a trailblazer because he paved the way, you know, from, you know, oftentimes I didn't know if it was possible, you know, to achieve our dream. You know, we wanted to play in the NFL our whole lives, and everybody told us we couldn't. You know, sometimes things were stacked against us, but you know, I just kind of followed my big brother. You know, everything he did right, I followed. Everything he did wrong, I learned from. So you know, he's in the NFL right now. You know, he just finished up with the Seattle Seahawks, you know, finished this last season. And I've been blessed to have him in my life and to have him kind of just be every step ahead of me.
What was your, you brought it up a bit about your brother. What was your, do you mind talking about your family? If I recall right, were you raised by a single mother, Eric?
Yeah, I was raised by a single mother. You know, times were definitely hard, you know, at times. But, you know, thankfully now I have a close relationship with my father, you know, closer than ever. And, we've done a lot of repairing and things like that where things were damaged, and it's been a blessing, you know, having him in my life and kind of repairing that relationship, you know, just my whole family, you know, dynamic, my whole family mm-hmm. in its whole, just to see how close we've gotten, you know, where we are now to where, you know, we've been in the past. You know, it's always about working.
Isn't that a great thing? Isn't that nice? From
it is.
From what? Yeah. Isn't that, that's really cool. There was the CBA, as you know, you're being a football player. There were three significant things that you guys agreed upon today. One is the adding an extra game. I don't think this season coming up, but next season, to go to 17 games and adding two more teams to the playoffs. What do you think of those two things, first of all?
You know what? I just found out about this morning. Obviously, it's new news. I don't know. We'll see.
What's your hesitation? What give us your idea of what you're thinking on both sides?
I just, you know, it's a lot. You know, I'm a guy who, you know, plays every snap. So an extra game is a lot of, you know, numbers wise and things like that. You know, a whole extra game on my body is tough. You know, and
yeah, sure.
You know, obviously that extra game gets capped at a certain, you know, price point. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. What about two more teams into the playoffs?
I feel like that's been, you know, been talked about. It's been coming. You know, there's a lot. There was like, I think at the beginning of each playoff, there's like four bye teams.
Right.
That makes sense.
The third one is they are not going to test for pot.
No, they are, I think. I think they just like reduce the like you can't get suspended or something like that. I don't know. I think that's just the one that just takes the media coverage. I don't feel like it's really that one. That one's not of importance, you know, regarding like all the new rule changes and stuff like that. I feel like that one's like one of the least important ones, but I feel like it just takes a lot.
Right.
You know, it's popular.
Right. Before you go, and thanks a lot for doing this. This mm-hmm. is you are a way better guest than fucking Russ. Okay. You know, Rusty, tell me about how you came to know his daughter, how that all started.
So I remember
Allie is her name.
Yeah, Allie. Yes. So I went to UCLA. Allie went to UCLA as well. Mm-hmm. My buddy, I remember right when I left my high school in Fresno, mm-hmm. we were that summer. We had to come to UCLA to kind of like start registering in classes like before school had even started.
Right.
And it was one of my buddies' birthdays, and they went to Oaks Christian, which was in, you know,
yeah, in Sherwood,
yeah, out here. So I went to the party, you know, went to the birthday party, and it was I met Allie there. So I met her. I was like, well, I don't know, 18. Yeah.
How old are you now?
I'm 28. 10 years ago, dang.
10 years ago. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And then we both went to UCLA, you know, we both kept in contact, good friends, and then started dating.
Well, you might be the best looking couple I've ever seen on Instagram, you guys. Jesus.
Appreciate it.
Your kids are gonna be strong. You're gonna have strong kids, man.
It's pretty crazy to think about. You know, that's 10 years. That's cool.
Yeah, good. What about the first time you met Russ? What it was probably nerve-wracking. Had you heard about Russ? You probably heard stories from Allie.
Yeah, I heard stories from Allie and stuff like that. Yeah, it was cool. I feel like a lot of guys can take it one way or the other. You know, you can take the coward approach. Right. You can take the coward approach where it's like I'm in fear, or you could just be like, you know, this is me. What's up?
Good for you. Good for taking them on. What's most can you tell us so far in your career, what's most memorable? What sticks out the most for you so far, in your NFL career?
Man, what's the most? I'm trying to think of something that really means a lot to me. Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, playing my brother and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like, even though I played him a couple times now and we haven't won, I still have a little hate for that. But, you know, every time I get to play him, I feel like it's just so cool, you know. Just our journey and just, you know.
Yeah, cool.
Just not taking it for granted. You know, it's a big in-the-moment type of deal for me. So I appreciate that always.
When you were younger, did you guys scrap a little bit, you and your brother? Any of that?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was daily. It wasn't like, yeah, I think our last fight was actually our last like fist fight was like probably 4 days before he went to college at Cal Berkeley, and
no shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big fight. It was like our biggest, like it was like our finale kind of. That was like the last time we really fought, and I remember our fight before that. Like there was a big fight before that, and I had busted him in the lip. And yeah. My mom came in the room and broke it up, but he went to school the next day with like a busted lip. And yeah. I remember I was telling all my friends, like, yeah, I did that yesterday. Like, so then this time when we fought, there was nobody home. And I had this small bed that was behind me. And I remember after I threw my, cause I would always say, I'm going to hit you first if you mess with me. Cause I just didn't want to show that I was playing around.
Yeah.
So I hit him, and then when I waited for the retaliation, he pushed me on my back onto the bed, and then it was over for me.
Haymakers. He started.
Haymakers. There was blood all over the walls and stuff like that. It was serious. Like Woo! I was busted up pretty bad.
That's funny.
But it's humbling.
That's cool, man. Listen, Eric, we'd love to get you on again sometime. If you agree to that, that would be great. I really appreciate you're our first guest. Actually, on the podcast. So
hey, number one.
You sound like a fantastic young man, and I had always heard that about you. Russ has been bragging about you for a long time, and this certainly didn't disappoint. All the best in the off season. Stay safe, you guys, through the virus, and you're now the official mascot of the Suspendables podcast.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
See you later, man.
See ya.
Well, finally. I think Eric should be the host. I think me and Eric.
I was worried about that.
You know what? You are fucking done, dude.
Hey, Eric, they're letting me go, bud. They're letting me go.
Yeah, this guy can take us over the top. He can take me over the top. What, Eric, way to go, buddy. Okay, way to go, man. Okay, we got a new job for you in the off season. Okay, and it's going to be better than that $50 million contract. You have, okay? It's going to be very strong.
Yeah, when you want a pay cut, start the show.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
Okay, good. He's a Eric, good kid. We love him.
What a nice kid. I want to adopt him. Holy jeez. Yeah. And he told some great stories. Huge dust-ups he used to get in with his brother, Russ.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, could you imagine trying to fight one of those two guys?
Oh, Jesus. And they're both big guys, right? Like, they're ripped, and of course they're ripped, right? Shit. They play in the NFL, but...
Like you and I, yeah.
Yeah. Ripped and chipped. We're chipped.
Well, what a great show. We ended up... Everyone, I hope you're not offended by us having fun. And that was a great interview with Eric. And Rusty, stay safe. And
thanks.
We'll be back at you sooner or later to help everyone get through this trying time.
And if we get quarantined, we'll be doing it daily.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to need something to do.
Something to do.
Or if everyone gets quarantined, they're going to need to listen to us. So we'll talk about that. There we go. Another show of The Suspendables in the books.
Everybody be safe and healthy. Thanks.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.